some of them. It didn't matter that they'd barely had time to unpack the gear yet. These were real deal, ready for action American warriors, as impatient as I was to find some action, just itching to test their training and preparation in a hot battle zone. I knew what those evil grins meant. "This will get us fighting?" one of our heavy gunners asked. "No doubt," I told him. "Then yeah," he said, as the others nodded and smiled. "We're good to go." 3 hours later, all 16 of us, snipers Rolex and Roe, heavy gunners Big D and Bakes, communicators Lope and Cams, assistant officers Nick and John, and the rest of the platoon, backed by 16 Iraqi scouts, were on our feet, taking a late morning stroll beyond the perimeter wire of Combat Outpost Cowboy and into the pockmarked outskirts of Habaniya. This was a banged-up neighborhood of high-walled houses, open sewers, and potholed streets. Cars and trucks zoom past us. When bullets are flying, no one likes to drive slowly. Garbage burned in piles on the corners. One whiff of that could sap your appetite for the rest of the day. Most of the local people tried to stay inside. The blocks were eerily quiet until they were ferociously loud. Every block or two had another mosque, some modest, some grand, all of them sending out calls for prayer 5 times a day. In full kit and body armor in the 110-degree heat, long pants, long shirts, boots, gloves, battle helmet, weapon, ammo and water, probably 60 pounds of gear per man, we did not exactly blend in. We might as well have carried a giant banner as we walked along. "Go ahead, take your shot. The SEALs are here." With the desert sun directly overhead, I took an overlook position on a rooftop with our snipers. My assistant officers were positioned in a nearby palm grove with our heavy weapons gunners, a perfect L-shaped ambush layout, when the first Toyota rolled up. I don't think the Iraqi mortar team had a clue what was coming next. Given the free-fire zone Habaniya had become, they had no reason to expect anything at all. Standing on the truck bed, the mortar operator wasn't even looking our way. He was staring at what must have seemed like another easy target for an over-the-wire mortar attack. Maybe he'd hit the next American taking a bathroom break. But he never got the chance to launch. On the rooftop, Rolex and Roe put their scopes to their eyes. They tucked their chins tight and squeezed off round after round. Their weapons erupted like tightly held jackhammers. Pop, 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 pop. These shots were flying that fast. At exactly the same moment, Big D fired his ferocious Mark 48 from the grove. That let off more of a low bass rumble. The instant D fired, Nick and John directed the rest of the line to fire too. All of them erupted immediately. Fast rounds and big rounds, loud and hard, caught the mortar gunners from several different angles, milliseconds apart. His body spun around like a jacket in a clothes dryer. 1, 2, almost 3 full spins before he tumbled from the bed of the pickup and onto the ragged concrete below. Plunk. From where I stood, I had a straight-on view of the driver. He looked frozen in terror, almost white. His eyes made bullseye circles and his hands jumped 3 inches off the steering wheel. Without glancing one way or another, or once touching the brake, he dove out the side window with the truck still rolling forward. As the driver's body was still in the air, one of my snipers swung around and nailed him squarely in the side of his head. The driver's body splattered to the concrete just as the truck careened into a ditch on the left and finally came to a stop. Our platoon had been on the ground less than a day by then. The guys were bleary from travel and smacked by the heat, but we were already doing what we had come for. We had begun our historic campaign to redefine the battle space and shift the momentum of a frustrating and long-running war. "I like working the day shift," I told Roe and Rolex as they put their sniper rifles down and we climbed off the roof. "Any shift," Roe said. It didn't take long for word to spread across Anbar. A new group of predators were in town now, and they were working around the clock. Here in the second decade of America's war on terror, conventional military methods just aren't getting it done anymore. Massive invasions, long occupations, extended nation-building campaigns, they still have their place in the U.S. military arsenal. But some of their legendary effectiveness has definitely begun to fade. Those old approaches are hugely expensive in blood and in money. The commitments just go on. And far too often, Korea, Vietnam, Afghanistan, Iraq, the long-term results don't quite match the hopes going in. None of this should come as a big surprise. The old ways of fighting were designed in a very different era for a very different set of threats. We'll never defeat our 21st century enemies with World War II battle plans. Today's brewing conflicts are mobile and unpredictable. They pop up quickly and almost anywhere. Iran, Syria, North Korea, Somalia, Venezuela. Take your pick of pugnacious countries and nagging trouble spots. The Pak-Afghan border, the Palestinian territories, the Hindu Kush. The fighters are armed, niche, and impervious to calm diplomacy. How much longer until drones or tactical nukes are up for sale on eBay? Just log on to PayPal and type in the dollar amount. War isn't just nation against nation anymore. It's tribal warlords crazed.